Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour today, we'll be talking about an issue that we certainly have discussed before on the program, and that is the separation of church and state. But we'll be looking at this church-state question in a particular arena, and it's something that we have never talked about before, and that is church-state issues as they play out in the military. And our guest is Mikey Weinstein. He's someone who comes from a military family, a family with a long military history spanning three consecutive generations of military academy graduates. He was a freshman at the Air Force Academy back in 1973, and at that time was the target of anti-Semitic attacks. He thought, perhaps for the most part, he'd managed to put that experience behind him until his son went to the academy of 2003 and was subjected to the same treatment. And as they talked, Mikey got the idea that, in fact, if anything, things today were worse than they were back in 1973. And his anger over that situation, in part, led him to take on this issue, the issue of religious bias in the military, and also to found the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And this morning he'll talk with us about this set of issues, church-state issues in the military. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. His family has served, members of his family have served in every major combat engagement from World War I to the present War on Terror. He is a 1977 honor graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, and also a lot of his family members are graduates. His oldest son and daughter-in-law are graduates, as well as his youngest son, and his dad is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. He spent 10 years in the Air Force as a JAG, a military attorney. He also spent over 3 years in the West Wing of the Reagan administration as legal counsel in the White House, and also has worked as an attorney in firms in both New York City and Washington, D.C. He is also the author of a book that I want to mention that talks about this issue and about his experiences. And the title of the book is With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. Thomas Dunn Books is the publisher. That's a division of St. Martin's Press. He's talking with us this morning by telephone. And, of course, as always, questions and comments are welcome. We just ask callers to try and be brief so that we can keep the program moving along and get in as many different people as possible. But callers are welcome into the show. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. So whichever number works for you, use that one. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mr. Weinstein, hello.
Hi, how are you doing, David?
I'm good, thanks, and yourself?
Just great.
Tell me tell us a little bit about your experiences, the experiences that you had when you were at the Air Force Academy. This was back in the 1970s.
Yes, this is something that was very cathartic for me. I didn't really want to talk about it. My publisher is one of the largest ones in New York. And when we did the book, which is, as you mentioned, it's called With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military, they felt it was really necessary for the arc of the story to go into this. But my first year at the Air Force Academy in 1973, I had two Christian roommates, and the first year at Annapolis or West Point, you're called a plebe. At the Air Force Academy, it's douli, which is from the Greek word doulos, meaning slave, and it's very apropos. And I received a series of threatening swastika-covered notes under the door of our room. My roommates were there, and in the course of this happening over a period of a couple of weeks, was beaten senseless twice. The people at the Academy never ever found out who did it. And, obviously that was something that was extremely one of the worst experiences of my life.
Yeah. And this is something that, would you say that this was more serious than any kind of abuse visited on other cadets, and it was because you were Jewish?
Oh, there was absolutely no question about that. I mean, it was, this stood out like a tarantula on a wedding cake. It was such an anomaly that I was sure that, this was just, it came about because I wanted to give part of my meager cadet pay to that most un-American of organizations, the United Way, because if you remember in the fall of 73 is when the Yom Kippur War started in Israel, I was hardly the only American or only a Jewish American that wanted to give some money to help Israel fight. They were being being surrounded and being fought by Pan-Arabian nations again. And I guess apparently that must have pissed somebody off. I'll never know what happened, where it came from. But no, this was clearly different. I was sure it was an anomaly, and I pressed on. And I love the Air Force Academy. My children have gone there. My brother-in-law, and I was sure that this was an anomaly.
Well, how did the leadership of the academy react to what happened to you?
I don't really know. I was a fourth classman. I thought they had kind of a ridiculous way of trying to investigate this. They tried, after the first assault, they tried to isolate me in another part of the Air Force Academy to draw out the attackers, and it worked, except they weren't there when I got beaten senseless a second time. When they couldn't seem to find anyone, they were under pressure because the Board of Visitors, including at that time Senator Barry Goldwater, were coming to the academy. They put me in a room and accused me of doing this to myself, which is amazing. I didn't think I had telekinesis. I couldn't move pieces of paper under the door. I couldn't beat myself senseless. When they asked me to sign a confession, I lost it. I was 18 years old, and I carried this shame with me for a long time. I punched an OSI, Office of Special Investigations agent, an Air Force officer. I hit him in the head, and I went running out of the administration building back to my our barracks or our dorms, and I just waited to be arrested and shot, but nobody ever came.
Hmm. And I guess it's my understanding that really the thing that made an activist out of you, that really made you want to take on this issue today, had to do with the stories that you heard from your son, who was at the academy.
Yes and no. I really have to thank Mel Gibson for it. In February of 2004, when he came out with his wonderful movie, I forget the name, I think the name was The Jesus Chainsaw Massacre or Freddy vs. Jesus. Obviously, I'm referring to the movie called The Passion of the Christ. This was almost 4 years ago, right? February of 2004. I was just stunned to find out, not from my three kids there, my two Jewish sons and my Christian future daughter-in-law. And, of course, I knew hundreds of other cadets, and my wife and I have given a lot of time, money, blood, sweat, tears, through the many years to the academy. During my White House years, I would often bring back, White House celebrities to speak and talk to the cadets. And for me, it was very transcendent, 4 years that I was there. But I was stunned to find out how the academy leadership was pushing, in a way that only the military can, of the 4,400 cadets and the 6,000 staff to go see this movie. And I brought it to the attention of the commanding general at the academy, who is now the president of the Military College of South Carolina, which is known as the Citadel, General John Rosa, because I thought this would be a Tiger Woods 2-inch putt to fix. Somebody has simply gotten out of control here. I thought that was just it, and I let it go. And, for three straight days, when the cadets marched into Mitchell Hall, David, which is the huge 2 acres under one roof, a dining facility, they stand at attention, look at their plates, and there were posters exhorting them to go see this movie. I was contacted by Christian members of the faculty, not even my own children. I called my kids up and said, "What the hell's going on?" They said, "Dad, this is just the way it is here." And I went, "And no, it's not. We have something called a constitution in this country, which I might remind your listeners, our beautiful and very precious United States Constitution represents the very first time in the history of, Homo sapiens that we've ever had a nation-state create a governing document that did not invoke the name of somebody's particular deity. I mean, we have 10,000, give or take, world religions on this planet, and our Constitution allows all of them to have a level playing field or no faith at all, if that's what you want to follow in this country. I thought the Academy had fixed this. I mean, you may remember, David, and your listeners, that in 2003 and 2004, the Air Force Academy went through a horrendous sexual assault scandal. And they brought in, 4 or 5 new senior officers to fix that. And, and so that was what had caught all the headlines. A couple months later, my son Casey and his wife Amanda both graduated from the academy. George W. Bush came out. It was a huge ceremony. It was all wonderful and great. I took my family to Hawaii for 2 weeks to celebrate their graduation. When we came back, the academy decided to have its first ever graduate leadership conference, where they were going to call back, I guess, stellar graduates. We've had about 40,000. They brought back 174 to tell them how they had defeated, so to speak, the sexual assault scandal, David. And it was during that time that at the kickoff cocktail hour for this 3-day gathering that my youngest son, Curtis, who had just come out of his first year at the academy, was now a third classman, had just finished the very arduous combat support survival training program at the academy, and he and along with about 40 other cadets were bused down from the main cadet area to the alumni hall and Doolittle Hall to kind of mingle with the graduates. And the moment I saw them, I knew that something was seriously wrong. I mean, you know your kids, and I've got, you know, four kids, and he was, you know, he has a lot of what I would call juvenile impetuosity. He's a tough kid. He was the city wrestling champ here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He was the Eagle Scout of the Year for the, you know, for the state, and he doesn't complain much. The moment I took one look at him, I knew something was seriously wrong. David, he asked me if we could leave and go off base. He had something he needed to tell me, which was completely unlike him. I even had driven one of my sports cars up from Albuquerque. We live about 5.5 hours away because I thought he loves cars more than I do. He didn't even want to drive. So the academy is huge. It's 18,000 acres. I made my my goodbyes. We drove off base to a McDonald's. We sat down, and he didn't say a word. And he's generally quite loquacious. And I said, "All right, I can't take this anymore, Curtis. What have you done?" And he said, "Dad, it's not what I've done. It's what I'm about to do." I said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, I need you to also let Mom know I'm about to get into trouble here, serious trouble." I thought maybe he'd gotten somebody pregnant. You know, he'd used drugs or an alcohol hit or an honor code violation. But instead, he told me that he was going to beat the S out of the next person that called him an effing Jew or accused him or the Jewish people of total complicity in the execution of Jesus Christ. And that was Lexington and Concord for me. That was 9/11. That was the cannon fuselage at Fort Sumter, David, and that was Pearl Harbor, because I'd known that 4 months earlier I had brought this to the attention of the Academy over this movie thing, and that's when I realized that this was a this was horrendous. It took another year to realize that it was so systemic. It was throughout, not hardly just the Air Force Academy. It was all over the U.S. Air Force, Marine Corps, Navy, and the Army, and that we basically have it's an imperious contagion of not Christianity or even evangelical Christianity. We have many evangelical Christians that are our supporters and clients, but it's a brand of a subset of evangelical Christianity that we're at war with. And I'm on your show today as a man with a gun smoke in my face. I am not a regular guest. I'm at war, again, not with Christianity or even evangelical Christianity, but with a type of Christianity that has a very long technical name that I'll just say once on your show today. It's called premillennial, dispensational, reconstructionist, dominionist, fundamentalist evangelical Christianity, about 12.6% of the American public, 38 million. And these are people that believe they have an illimitable right, irrespective of the Constitution, to push their biblical worldview on employees, if they work for them at Starbucks, Wendy's, McDonald's, whatever, Costco, you know, Pizza Hut, and particularly in the U.S. military, using the draconian specter of command influence to push their biblical worldview on helpless subordinates in the military. And that's hardly just that's not the same as in the civilian world between the employer and the employee. We just went over 6,750 clients for our foundation, and you didn't mention the website, so anyone who's listening today, please go to www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. We're a nonprofit IRS 501c3 charity. 6,750, we just went over active duty U.S. Marines, sailors, soldiers, airmen, some civilians that work for the military and veterans have come to us basically not as complainants but as spiritual, rape victim tormentees, and 96% of them are Christians, roughly three-fourths Protestant, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Methodist, Episcopalian. We even get Assemblies of God, Church of Christ, Southern Baptist, Mormon. One-fourth of that 96% of the 6,750 that we just passed last week are going to be Roman Catholic. So about 4% of the people coming to us are Jewish, Islamic, Buddhist, Hindu, Jain, Wiccan, atheist, or agnostic. But this is basically, this is not a Christian-Jewish issue, and it's not a political spectrum left or right issue. It's a constitutional right and wrong issue. And it's basically fundamentalist, dominionist Christians who are praying, P-R-A-Y, and P-R-E-Y, on non-evangelical, they're their non-evangelical Christian brothers and sisters, telling them, you know what, you may have thought that you're Christian enough, but we're here to tell you that you're not, and you better change or you're going to be burning eternally in the fires of hell along with the Jews and the Muslims.
Well, I have a caller here to bring in. We may get some other people who want to call in, ask questions, make comments. But certainly for people who have just joined us, I want to introduce again the guest, Mikey Weinstein. He's president and founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. They do indeed have that website if you'd like to take a look at it. He is a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy. He served for 10 years in the Air Force as a military attorney. He also spent 3 years in the Reagan administration as legal counsel in the White House and has also worked as an attorney in private practice in New York City and also Washington, D.C., and is the author of the book that I mentioned at the beginning of the program that also talks about the issue and about his experience. The title of his book is With God on Our Side, the subtitle One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. 333-9455 is the number in Champaign-Urbana. If you'd like to call in, toll free 800-222-9455. We have someone to start us off in a nearby community of Belgium. This is line four. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead. Line four, go ahead.
Yes, okay. I would like to tell your guest what Kiki Friedman told David Letterman. May the God of your choice bless you.
Well, that statement by Kiki Friedman is... The reason I like it so much, and I've heard it many times, is that it absolutely would have put a smile on the face of James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and Alexander Hamilton. You know, that's a very American perspective on this, which is, you know, it's very easy for the people that we're at war with to try to claim that we're trying to, you know, that we're battling Jesus and Christianity, and of course that's the exact opposite of what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's why the 96% of our client base in the U.S., you know, in the U.S. armed forces are Christians themselves, and you just, in this country, even if you work in just a two-person company, a little private company, call it, you know, you're selling lemonade on the street, if you try to push your biblical worldview on an employee in that situation, that violates Title 7 of the U.S. Code. But in the U.S. military, if you're being even gently evangelized by your military superior, get the hell out of my face, sir or ma'am, is simply not an option for you. In the U.S. military, it's a totally different environment. It's a trillion times worse. For instance, having sexual intercourse with someone other than your spouse, what we call adultery, is still a felony in the U.S. military and is routinely prosecuted. If you're told to go to the base dentist at 4 p.m. by a military superior and you don't go, you know, it's a felony. And the reason is that our very honorable and noble U.S. Armed Forces personnel give up many of their constitutional rights when they go into the U.S. military in order to serve a higher goal, which is what we call providing good order and discipline, which creates the necessary lethality for our armed forces to protect the full panoply of constitutional rights for the rest of us. Just like, you know, we have freedom of speech in this country, but you can't scream fire in a crowded theater. If you're Captain Jones, you cannot push your version of the gospel of Jesus Christ on a subordinate. You can't do that if you're Jewish or Muslim or Hindu,
right.
But it's not them doing it, and it's not the mainline progressive, you know, moderate Christians doing it. It's the it's the people that represent, you know, and their names are well known in this country. The now late Jerry Falwell, the now disgraced Ted Haggard, certainly James Dobson and Focus on the Family, Pat Robertson. I won't even touch the Mike Huckabee thing, but I can assure you that I understand very well the Great Commission of Matthew chapter 28. Verses 18 through 20, where it's one of the last things Jesus is supposedly says to the apostles, which is go and make disciples of all nations. I understand that. We've also decided in this country, when we created it, that mixing religion and government, we've seen this train leave the station before. Whenever a virulent form of any religious faith, in this case Christianity over the last 2,000 years, has become inextricably intertwined with government, and particularly the part of government where all the weapons are, where the sticks and stones are that break our bones, we do not, ladies and gentlemen, end up with little creeks, rivers, you know, ponds and streams. We end up with oceans and oceans of blood. We have seen the train leave the station. It always goes to one town, Slaughterville. So in this country, just like the gentleman said, and just like Kinky Friedman said, may the God of your choice bless you. You know, everyone is on an equal footing. And if I'm walking through a shopping mall and getting evangelized or in a restaurant, that's fine. But you can't do it if you're my military superior, and you can't do it if you're my shift manager at Starbucks.
Right.
All right. Well, do you think, though, and I mean you, Mikey, do you think, though, that in fact that what we're talking about here does run counter to maintaining good order and discipline, and that in fact it can affect the ability of the military to carry out its mission?
Let me explain this to you, and it's a very good question. Where was, somnambulistic or sleepy Homer Simpson and Marge Simpson America on Tuesday, July 12, 2005? That's an apocryphal day. On that day, the number two ranking general among the thousands in the chaplain's corps of the United States Air Force, Brigadier General Cecil R. Richardson, just a few weeks ago, nominated by President Bush to get his second star and take over as the head chaplain for the United States Air Force, made the amazing statement on the front page of the newspaper, David, and listeners, that is most reviled by the Pentagon. And what would that newspaper be, do you think, David?
New York Times?
Correct. On the front page, he made a statement that it was now the U.S. Air Force's new policy to, quote, reserve its right to evangelize anyone it determines to be unchurched. Now think about the operational definitions of those particular nouns and verbs in that statement. It's pretty mind-blowing. What if he had said, we reserve the right in the U.S. Air Force to Islamicize anyone who is unmosqued, to Judaize anyone who is unsynagogued, to atheize anyone, you get the picture. We get constant calls. In fact, I was almost going to be late on this show today, getting calls from what's referred to by the Pentagon as the AOR. That's how the Pentagon refers to Afghanistan and Iraq, the area of responsibility. We are fighting Wahhabist fundamentalist Islam's attempt to impose Sharia law on the rest of the world. Must we become the American Christian Taliban and Al-Qaeda to defeat the Islamic versions? We defeated Tojo Mussolini and Hitler in World War II in just 44 months. And guess what? We didn't have to become fascistic Tojo Mussolini and Hitler. Here's the technologically most lethal organization ever created by our species, which is our United States military, has become overrun. The constitutionally mandated wall separating metaphysical and physical, spiritual and temporal, church and state, where all the laser-guided conventional and nuclear weapons are, is nothing, I'm sad to report to you on this Wednesday morning, nothing left but smoke and debris. That's why we are currently in federal court in Kansas City. We have filed a massive lawsuit against the Pentagon and the Department of Defense, and our theory is we will show with our brave troopers that are our co-plaintiffs, we call it the four Ps, a pernicious and pervasive pattern and practice of unconstitutional rape of the religious liberties of our U.S. military fighting men and women by their command structure. This represents, I'm not on the show just talking about an issue, this represents a national security threat to our country, every bit as much in formidability, magnitude, width, and breadth as that which is now challenging us by a resurgent Taliban, and according to our second most recent national intelligence estimate, an Al-Qaeda that is at least as strong as it was on 9/11.
Well, let's talk with some more folks. Let's get with someone here where we are in Urbana, and it's line one. Hello?
Hi. I'm originally from Colorado, and I have a question for you because I was there two summers ago visiting a friend of mine in Colorado Springs. And I understand the Air Force Academy is sort of insular and closed, but, of course, Focus on the Family and all these sort of these institutions and groups. The general sort of atmosphere I kind of got a take on in Colorado Springs was extreme, ultra, neocon sort of evangelistic, as you said. So what I'm wondering is, does it all sort of tie together? I mean, all these actors and groups in Colorado Springs sort of reinforce each other and influence each other and become stronger, so to speak.
Very, very good question. I get asked that a lot. I speak all over the country, and that's a question that pops up a lot. Colorado Springs is often referred to as the Protestant Vatican. Over 100 of our nation's most conservative, fundamentalist Christian organizations are headquartered there. Focus on the Family, I refer to them as Focus on the Fascists, the New Life Church, Cowboys for Jesus, the Navigators, I can go on and on. It's a huge, and of course they have every right to be there. They do not have a right to, quote, engage the machinery of the state to push their biblical worldview. Those are not my words. Those are words carved out of innumerable United States Supreme Court rulings for many decades. Clearly, we initially thought that this was compartmentalized in Colorado at the Air Force Academy because of the nexus, to all of these, extreme conservative right-wing, unbridled, biblical worldview of Jesus perspectives that are resonant in these various organizations that were there. We were wrong. We were wrong. It is literally everywhere. It's as bad, if not worse, at West Point. It's all over Annapolis. And as I said before, look, it's so bad that to some of your listeners that are aware of, and ma'am, let me ask you, have you ever been on a military installation?
Oh, yes.
All right, you're aware of what a BX is or a PX, right?
Yes.
What about you, David?
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
All right, well, that's like the shopping center. It's
right.
Owned by the military. I think you'll be shocked, man. We exposed this to about 2 months ago. AFES, which is the Army Air Force Exchange Service, which runs these post-exchange and base exchanges for the Army and the Air Force, the Navy has its own, has just opened up at Malmstrom Air Force Base up in Great Falls, Montana, which is a nuclear base. We have a lot of nukes that are in silos there, and, of course, it's along the northern tier, because back during the days of the Cold War, that was the fastest way to get a nuke into the Soviet Union, would be right over the North Pole. They just opened up right next to their laundry, bowling alley, commissary, and BX, right in the BX complex, a new store. And I kid you not, it's called Enabled by Christ, a store for the Christian man. I can't make this stuff up. This, of course, all goes right into our lawsuit. At Fort Riley in Kansas, in one of the major military organizations, had a big poster of Ann Coulter up with her famous statement, "We should invade their countries, execute their leaders, and force them all to accept Christianity," where families went by for soldiers that are going back and forth constantly between Iraq and Afghanistan and this major combat base. When you walked into the military uniform store at their PX, I can't make this stuff up, they sell three books: the Soldier's Bible, which is a regular Bible with a camouflage cover. Right next to it on the little bookstand area there, where you buy your military uniforms, is the regular Bible, and right next to that is the book called "The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam," which rips the guts out of that religious faith. So you want to tell me? Just this morning, we had a group of officers in Afghanistan at a forward operating base contact me. That's why I was on with your I guess it was your producer, David. Mm. They're furious because when they go through their mess hall at this combat operations base, every day there's a new big sign up out of the Bible, warning them about how they have to be the correct type of spirituality, and the embarrassment of the local Afghanis and others that can see this stuff. We're trying to tell them that this isn't a religious war. So at the end of this program today, I will contact our senior moles at the Pentagon and make it clear that needs to be eradicated immediately. We have pictures. They took pictures for us. Or we will go to CNN, MSNBC, ABC, the Associated Press. It is absolutely unbelievable. And getting back to the first question, yes, when you're in Colorado Springs, you can feel the conservatism. Well, when you're in Malibu or Northern California, you can feel the liberality. This is a beautiful part of America. But as I said before, there are times, there are so many times you can push the biblical worldview of even fundamentalist dominionist Christians, where it's completely legal. I mean, they've never had. I mean, if Jesus was is looking at this stuff right now, he could not possibly be happier with how his gospel can be pushed in the United States of America. But I am constantly contacted by people that tell me that they will not be restricted in their zeal to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ from their perspective by something that is considered flawed man's law, which is just the Constitution.
Could I ask you one last question?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Wouldn't you say, then, that these people have, maybe this is too far, but have they not committed treason? Have they not decided that there's something above their obligation to defend the United States?
It's a great question. Remember, every person that works for Starbucks or for Costco does not take an oath. Everyone in the United States military, including the civilians that work for it, take an oath, a blood oath, to preserve and protect, support, and defend the Constitution of the United States. This is absolutely, positively sedition and clearly treason. There is no question about it. Absolutely, positively. Let me say it again. If you doubt what I'm saying or have any concerns, I come from a conservative, military, Republican family. I'm a registered Republican. I worked in the West Wing of a Republican White House. I was general counsel for a man who's a well-known billionaire who ran twice for president, H. Ross Perot, who was one of my father's best friends in the class of 53 at Annapolis. I know the religious right would love it if I could be viewed as a tree-hugging Northern California, Chardonnay-sipping, bleeding-heart liberal Democrat. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm not. So if you go to www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org, again, we're a nonprofit IRS charity, look at what we have on there. The website it will shock you. But now I know why that poor guy set himself on fire in front of Robert McNamara's office during the Vietnam War at the Pentagon. What does it take to wake up, an America that seems to only get excited about the idea of maybe spending three chilly nights on an air mattress in front of Circuit City to make sure they get their PlayStation 3?
We're a little bit past our midpoint here. I want to thank the last caller, perhaps get some others, and also for anybody who's just tuned in, introduce again the guest, Mikey Weinstein. He's the president and founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. This is an organization that's dedicated to upholding the principle of separation of church and state in the military. They do indeed have a website. You'd like to find out more about them. That is militaryreligiousfreedom.org. As he says, he comes from a long and large military family, three consecutive generations of military academy graduates. He's a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy. He spent 10 years in the Air Force as a military attorney, a JAG. And as he says, he also spent time in the Reagan administration as a legal counsel in the White House. He's also been an attorney in private practice and is the author of a book that I mentioned as well. It's published by St. Martin's Press. The title of the book is With God on Our Side, which is about not only about his personal experiences, but about this issue. So you can certainly take a look at the book. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We do have a number of callers here. We'll continue and next talk with someone in Crete on our line number two.
Good morning.
Hello? Yes?
My son graduated from the Air Force Academy, class of 07. We as a family learned about what was going on at the academy. We are evangelical Christians and believe in proselytizing. However, we were appalled to hear what was going on over there. We had a we were a member of the Northern Illinois Parents Club for the Air Force Academy. We had a family in our group that were Jewish, and their son evidently had some minor problems. And we were just appalled to hear the way this was forced upon people. I think when you watch the internet and so forth, there's the Muslim religion in some cases where they say convert or die. We as evangelicals say we offer you our religion. However, in a military situation, to force people in ranks and so forth, as they're lined up to go to the mess hall or whatever, to be just berated that they're non-Christians, it was almost unbelievable to us to even hear that this type of thing was even possible anywhere, let alone at our military academies, and it's evidently somewhat prevalent. So my original call today was to kind of shore you up and say there are some people on your side, yet when you talk about your website, it's obvious that there are a wide variety of other Christians that are also on your side. Again, we believe in evangelizing, but not forcing it down anybody's throat, and not under a controlled situation like the academies. Again, we were very sympathetic to the member in our club, and we were very appalled as to what was going on.
Well, I sure appreciate it. First, I'd like to thank your son for our daughter, for their service. They're obviously classmates of my son, Curtis, who graduated in 07. And I think we're probably, I'm sure you were out there for the graduation. And as you know, they were expecting potentially bad weather, but it turned out to be a beautiful day there in Falcon Stadium. So
you know something, I think I know your son.
It may be very possible.
You just said Curtis.
Yes, Curtis.
Black wavy hair.
No, he's bald.
Okay, then it's somebody different. That would have been the Jewish family that was a member of our club.
Yes, it was. We get this a lot. I would say the most prominent, well-known born-again evangelical Christian, who's one of our best supporters, has now become kind of very nationally well-known. We all remember about 13 months ago when the U.S. attorney firing scandal broke out of the West Wing. The lead of the 8 or 9 U.S. attorneys fired was David Iglesias, who lives in Albuquerque. In fact, he just turned 50 yesterday. My wife and I took he and his wife out to lunch. David is of course, was the U.S. attorney for New Mexico, a conservative, evangelical, born-again Christian. We've been friends for, so many years I've forgotten. When this first broke at the Air Force Academy, David gave me a small pocket bill of rights. He might add he's also a Navy JAG. He's a captain in the Naval Reserve as a JAG. He gave me a small pocket bill of rights, and he highlighted the First Amendment, and he said, exactly, sir, what you have said, exactly. And he knows that I, too, support evangelizing and proselytizing, but in the right place. I don't know Jesus, but I know that this is not something that Jesus would want to have done, put a shotgun at somebody's head and say, convert or die. because this is what we're fighting. This is exactly what we're fighting. So we've had, again, large numbers of evangelical Christians. We had an evangelical Christian cadet at the Air Force Academy that became a client because he or she could not take the pressure that they were not actually Christian enough. And that as a result, they were not Christians at all, just like no Catholics are Christians, no Mormons are Christians, and the vast majority of Lutherans and Protestants and Methodists and Episcopalians also are, quote, not Christian. There is a time and a place to, you know, for everyone to do this, but it is so out of control. And what is particularly scary is that the people that are pushing this are people that focus very much on, again, premillennial dispensationalism, which came out of Great Britain around 1820, this concept of the Book of Revelation. And we caught a multi-star general who ordered his command of 75,000 folks, which includes tons and tons of nuclear weapons and all of the airframes, bombers and fighters that control them. He ordered his staff to put together a PowerPoint presentation, which he wanted all 75,000 members of his command to sign off that they have read and understood, showing the direct parallel between the Book of Revelation and all of our movements into Crete, Mosul, Anbar province, Sadr City in the northwest part of Baghdad, Tora Bora, all over Gardez, all over Afghanistan. We stopped it after it got out to about 2,500 people. But it's what has happened, like I said, is not just a national disgrace. It's morphed into a national security threat.
Two other comments I'd like to make. My son that just graduated said that he saw a little of this. But I think because he professed to be a fundamental Christian, he was probably left alone.
Right.
The other comment was that we attended all the Labor Day weekend, Parents' Weekends, and we stayed in Colorado Springs. And, of course, we went to graduation and stayed in Colorado Springs also. And there's been some comments today about how strong the evangelical community was in Colorado Springs. We did not experience that, but we were taken up so much with what was going on at the academy that we stayed at the academy, went to a restaurant, went back to our room, went to the academy. In other words, that's where we spent our time there, so we never really noticed that. Obviously, I think you would agree that for that type of activity within the community of Colorado Springs would probably be appropriate. But again, and I'll hang up saying this, I sympathize with anybody of any religion in a military setting that they have their commanding officers or their upperclassmen trying to force the religion down their throat. I, as a Christian, was never taught that you force your religion on anybody. You may invite them under the proper setting. In other words, if two cadets went out for the weekend somewhere, one might talk to the other about his faith, but not under the controlled setting that the academy provided. We were shocked that this was going on. And we looked at one another and said, what in the world's going on over there?
You know, sir, I wish I could put you in my pocket and take you when I speak all over the country, and I wish you could be here when my family and I get routinely get death threats. I mean, we've had dead animals sacrificed and put on our front door. We've had tires slashed, feces thrown at the house. We've had the largest windows in our house shot out twice. They burned a church down once when the head of the church came out to support me. But I simply could not say it any better, David, than your guest has just said it. Mm-hmm. And it is that this is not a fight about the tenets of any religion. It's a fight about time, place, and manner in which to proselytize or share your faith. That's all we're doing, and yet that's what this war is about.
Well, let's talk with someone else here in Oswego on our line number 3. Hello. Their caller there, Oswego, line 3?
Line 3 is Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, go ahead.
Mr. Weinstein, you've given compelling testimony that there's a certain Christian sect who's persecuting Jews at the Air Force Academy. And I certainly that bigotry is deplorable. But I want you to know that the vast majority of Christians, especially evangelical Christians, love the Jews and consider the reestablishment of Israel as a great evidence of the validity of Bible prophecy. I'm an evangelical Christian, and people who listen to this program know that I have defended Israel and the Jews every time I can. This program usually defends Palestinians against Jews, and I have called in to defend Jews. But let me say, that evangelical Christians have also experienced their share of persecution in the military service. Right now, the prevailing policy, at least in the Navy, I don't know whether it's service-wide, but in the Navy, chaplains cannot pray in Jesus' name. A prohibition against prayer in Jesus' name is definitely an establishment of religion. It is the government telling gospel ministers how they must pray. So since they can't pray as they would want to, it's also a violation of the free exercise clause of the Constitution.
Sir, if I could just respond first, thank you for calling in. I think you and I are going to find ourselves at cross purposes. We're the ones that caused that to happen. We have no trouble with an evangelical or fundamentalist chaplain praying in the name of Jesus, but not at a mandatory military formation where people of other faiths have to be there. Number one, number two, you mentioned that I'm fighting an issue at the Air Force Academy. Please listen carefully on David's program today. Here are the numbers for you: 737 and 132. That would be 737. And 132, because we now have 737 U.S. military installations that the Pentagon acknowledges that we have, is really closer to 1,000, scattered around the planet as we garrison the globe in 132 countries. And on every single one of these military installations, we have a version of the American Christian Taliban and Al-Qaeda for the officers called the Officers Christian Fellowship, and for the enlisted folks called the Christian Military Fellowship. They have a three-level or tripartite goal, and they're unabashed about these goals. It's right on their website. I can't make this stuff up. The first goal, they view these goals as being much more critically important than the oaths they all swore out to preserve and protect, support, and defend the Constitution. Goal number one, they want to see, quote, a spiritually transformed United States military. Goal number two, listen carefully, with ambassadors for Christ in uniform, which parenthetically has not worked out too well for planet Earth the last 2,000 years. Goal number three, empowered by the Holy Spirit. Now, I appreciate what you're saying about how much you love the Jews in Israel, you know, but I'm not an Israeli. I'm an American citizen. Yes, I'm Jewish. I'm proud of being Jewish. Oftentimes, we find that to be very disingenuous, that we find that fundamentalist Christians, when they say to me, we love you Jews in Israel, why are you fighting us, Mikey, is that, you know, my wife calls it the first Thanksgiving theory, that you love Jews and Israel only to the extent that the, you know, the pilgrims love the turkey the night before the first Thanksgiving. You're fattening the herd for the slaughter to bring about, to serve as an accelerant or lubricant to bring Jesus back. And then, of course, you know that in fundamentalist Christianity, there'll be the Battle of Armageddon, and that there's supposed to be a river 200 miles long and 4.5 feet deep, filled with nothing but the human blood of those that rejected Jesus. I'm not even going to get into eschatology or the end time stuff. I'm going to tell you that it is completely unconstitutional for a chaplain at an event where that is mandatory for military members that have no choice but to be there to pray in the name of Jesus Christ. And that's why we put our money where our mouth is. We are in federal court in Kansas City suing right on this stuff. So we're not going to have to worry anymore about whether you like it or I like it. It's whether it's up to a gentleman, a federal judge in a black robe to decide whether our Constitution allows everyone to have free exercise to the extent that we do not establish, or whether or not it doesn't exist.
We only have 5 minutes left, and the lines are full, and I would like to try to get at least one more caller in here, and the next person in line is in Coles County, and that's line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes. It seems to me, from what I've heard, that we may be seeing the slow but sure Nazification of the military. It seems to me that they ought to do more than simply tell these people, stop doing what you're doing. It seems to me that they ought to be tossed out of the military completely. I wonder what your comment is on that.
Sir, I couldn't agree more. We need to have 500 or 600 heads on poles someplace, and essentially people should be court-martialed. When you go to work for Sears Roebuck, you do not take an oath. In the military, we do. And these are people that should be court-martialed. They should be made a spectacle of. We should have, you know, mm-hmm. That's exactly what needs to be done. Because, our military is what provides the true freedoms for our country. It's why we can be on this radio show today. I'm not sure I would use the term Nazification, but I would use the term, we refer to it as a an unbridled fascistic contagion that has swept through the U.S. military. And it has happened on the watches of both Democrats and Republicans. The American people actually have to do something now.
as I said before, you know, go to our website, look at militaryreligiousfreedom.org. You look at my interviews with Dan Rather. I mean, I'm on the cover of even from everything from, you know, every magazine from Hustler to New Christian Century. This is out there, and we have a couple of movies coming out. But getting to the American people is costly and expensive. And you know, the dark side that we're fighting is insanely well financed. So there's an old saying here that's very apropos. In America, we seem to have only the illusion of democracy. You know, what we really have is an auction. You know, those with the most money. So we have got to fight, and we've got to stand up. You know, our true American values. And you know, so you won't see anybody running for president on either side. They'll never be asked a question about this during any debate. It will not happen.
Yes. Well, I certainly agree. I agree with you.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's go to Champaign County, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I'm wondering whether you chronicle Jerry Boykin. He's the guy that still had a special forces.
Yeah.
He should have been mustered out. He's the guy that was going around in his uniform talking to this group, this predispensationalist group that you're talking about.
Right. Boykin is a complete disgrace to America, as are so many of these others. He was the one that was going around, and actually it was in Mogadishu when we that famous Black Hawk Down thing. He claimed that he saw the visage or the face of Satan in an explosion of smoke, and was indicating that all of Islam is a false religion with a false god, and that his version of Jesus. He was going to many fundamentalist churches wearing his uniform. He barely got a tap on the wrist from the Bush administration. But remember, our head soldier is George W. Bush. We consider him to be an extremely suboptimal president, and the fish stinks from the head to wax Shakespearean. And there's no question that Boykin was just the early beginnings of this. But frankly, during my 3.5 years in the White House, I saw some of this happening in the West Wing. I managed the Iran-Contra investigation as the committee management officer. But, you know, I think it was Soren Kierkegaard who said that we live our lives forward, but we understand them backwards. I look back now and I can see this tidal wave coming. But you know, if you look on the airwaves, there's so much of it being taken up about what a terrible person and parent Britney Spears is, and there's so little talking about this.
One thing I wanted to add, though, is that I accept your idea that we have an American Taliban and we're supposedly fighting the Salafists, but they weren't in Iraq before we instigated it.
That's true.
Iraq was a very secular society, and I think you're taking Boykin's point in some bizarre way by saying that that's why we're there. I don't believe it, but thank you very much.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
To finish up here again, we're just about have a minute or so left. How just the tendencies that you're talking about here? How high up in the military leadership do you think that goes?
All the way.
All the way. We're talking about all the way to the head of the Joint Chiefs and the commanding officers of each of the service branches.
No, all the way.
I guess you're talking to the President of the United States, obviously,
who
is the Commander in Chief.
That's right. It's all over Congress. It's all over the State Department. It's all over the Department of Health and Human Services. But with regard to the military, it goes right to, as I said, the kindest thing I can say is this unbelievably suboptimal human being currently occupying the White House.
So would you expect that it would make a difference if whoever, at this point we have no idea who the next president of the United States is going to be, would it make a difference if it was one of the other Republicans who were currently running, or would it make a difference if it was one of the Democrats that are running?
Well, I'll tell you this, David. My philosophy is now, even though I'm a registered Republican, that under Republicans it appears as though that man exploits man. But under Democrats, it's just the opposite. So we've given up on both parties. That's why we're in federal court, laying down a withering field of fire, kicking ass, taking names, and we will leave sucking chest wounds on this unconstitutional heart of darkness, whether or not it's green, independent, Republican, or Democrat.
And in the meantime, you're paying whatever price you have to pay personally. You talked earlier about the fact that you have been threatened, and
my family,
and your family has.
Right. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, if a doctor tells you you've got a spot on your arm, a dermatologist, and you better get that thing taken off because it's cancerous, what are you supposed to do? I mean, we've put every asset we have in our family, and we've put it into a light airplane. We'll fly it into a mountaintop if we have to stop this. Fortunately, we've had some wonderful supporters, including the Rockefeller family. They are hardly the vast bastion of American liberality.
Friends of the Rockefellers, many others. We have thousands of people around the country that have contributed to us. Again, every contribution is fully tax deductible. But if you go to the website at militaryreligiousfreedom.org, you will see all the evidence. It is completely incontrovertible, and we need to get out there and fight. As I mentioned to the one gentleman who called in, it doesn't stop me because he says he likes Jews in Israel. I woke up yesterday as an American. First, I'm an American today. I'll be an American tomorrow. This is not about whether we like Jews more than atheists or agnostics more than Hindus. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with our Constitution and the fact that in this country, liberty means that you do not have to suffer duress because you don't have the right religious perspective. If you go to Clause 3, Article 6 of our Constitution, our founding constitutional framers were so assiduously careful to separate church and state. They saw what happened in Europe, where most of the tyrannies that occurred when men of the cloth had been men in political power. They looked at Cromwell in England. Heck, they didn't even have to leave the American shores. They looked at the Salem witch trials, and they said, not on our watch. Clause 3, Article 6, we will never have a religion test for any position in the federal government. Oh, unless, of course, I guess it's the U.S. military, which will hold a religion Geiger counter up to anyone. And again, you know, if you're something called unchurched, why, they reserve the right to evangelize you.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580, Mikey Weinstein. He is the president and founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. As you've heard, a group that's dedicated to upholding the principle of separation of church and state in the military. His website is militaryreligiousfreedom.org. He's an honor graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy, served 10 years in the Air Force as a JAG, a military attorney. He spent over 3 years in the Reagan administration as legal counsel in the White House, and also has worked as an attorney in private practice in both New York City and Washington, D.C. And Mr. Weinstein, thanks very much.
My pleasure.